Well, I pressed record at just the right moment. Welcome to the Eric Anders Lang Show. Our guest today, Joel Murray. How many hats do you wear?
I have a good amount of hats. My wife complains about it all the time. Every time I go out, it seems like I come back with three more hats. But I've got a few. I'm an actor. I'm a writer. I'm a director. I am the head of the Murray side of the William Murray Golf, which was originally Murray Brothers Golf.
Wonderfully colorful apparel company.
I like to represent. This is a little subtle something that's kind of come out for the Masters, but
azaleas
today. Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah.
You and your family, as we can start at the beginning, you started playing golf. How old were you?
We grew up across the street from a convent that was probably 80 acres. So that was our first golf course. I started when I was 5 or 6, hitting balls in there.
In a field, in a convent, without greens or anything?
Yeah, no. You just pick out a tree in the distance, and that was the hole. That's a par 4. Okay. you'd see how long it took you to get there. Then we all grew up caddying. I think they caught my oldest brother coming out of Mass. We were altar boys, too.
What is the ages of the family? I don't know.
There's an 18-year gap. My brother Ed is 74, and I'm 56. I'm the youngest. That's the range. There's 9 of us. Mom and Dad had no hobbies, although Dad had some golf clubs. I think he was more of a bowler, but he did play once in a while, and we used the heck out of those clubs and Walter Hagens that we drove into the ground.
But you used the clubs not as a familial obligation. It was actual just childish recreation.
Well, yeah, it was back in the day where, I remember I ran away once when I was like 7 years old and nobody ever looked for me. That's how it is when you grow up in a family of 9. Nobody noticed I ran away. Nobody looked for me. Nobody noticed there was somebody less at the table even. But so you were in charge of your own entertainment. My father, when he bought our house, he had the choice of buying one across from Flick Park in Glenview, Illinois, or this house in Wilmette across from a convent that had ponds and trees and all kinds of fruit. I mean, we didn't even find out about lunch till later in life, because you could go out there and eat rhubarb and strawberries and cherries and apples and pears and stuff like that. We would just scavenge all day long. But, you had to come home for dinner, and you had to come home when the lights were on. And, that's starting at age 4. Nobody was looking for you. That's how I got in the theater. I was at a friend's house, and the lady said, Joel, you got to go now. The boys have an audition for a play, and you have to go. I'm like, I don't have to be anywhere till 5:30. I could go. I got cast in a Wilmette Children's Theater play when I was in third grade and was in Oliver. One of her sons didn't get in it, and she was still angry, I think, to this day about that one. It just having that freedom of, being on your bicycle all day long. And, part of that was you throw a bag over your shoulder and ride your bike over to the little muni by our house. It's now called Canal Shores. It was the Peter Jans back in the day. But we actually, Canal Shores was a term the Murray brothers used. And they, it was not a complimentary term because it was a drainage canal that it runs through. They liked the name, and they actually changed the name after we were using that and then talking it up. It just kind of makes me laugh. It was derogatory, and now it's on the shirts.
I have two places I want to go with that. But first, you talked about theater and stage. Those people listening right now, either on a lawnmower, holding a weed whacker, driving a car, maybe someone's out there having sex. I always like to imagine that. Not in a creepy way. But anyway, Joel, could you paint the picture of where we are? Because there are noises going on and people are wondering, where are we?
This is crazy. We're right at the confluence of about 3 holes in the middle of Riviera. I came in by the bomb-sniffing dogs at the back gate, but I don't know my numbers offhand. We've got a par 3 that is like 7 here or something.
Yep, 7th hole.
7th hole. So, hey, I do know something. And yeah. This is like 14 over here?
Yep, wrapping around the other way, and then the 9th tee is right behind us.
And the 9th tee is right behind us. We're in the Genesis playground that they have built here.
So this is 14.
This is 14.
This is 14, right? Yeah. So, right behind the tee there. See, 14, right behind the
green.
Oh,
there you go. There we go. The numbers will set you free.
It's all numbers. You know the thing that's great is? Everyone listening, the answer is right.
Yeah, right. You were right until you told me I was wrong.
I'm so sorry.
Completely right.
I broke the first rule of improvisation.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Okay,
yes,
so
and it.
We've set the stage. Now, I'm curious to know about... you're describing your childhood. You're describing getting into acting. And the word that's coming to my head is the word feral. Is that... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we were a feral family. It's true. Like when my wife and I, who is also from Nine Kids and from Wilmette, Illinois, when we first saw Shameless, my wife was like, yeah, I can't watch it. Way too close to home. I mean, we used to do things like jump on the milk truck with the mail, with the milkman, and he'd give you 50 cents to actually do all his work. You know?
Oh.
We were able hands for hire back in the day. But and also, like, we have a clothing line, this William Murray Golf line, and a lot of our strange fashion sense came from the fact that, you know, every day was kind of like trying to find a Halloween outfit at the house.
People did you say, all share?
Yeah, you all shared. And I was spoiled because I got all the hand-me-downs. I was the youngest. And but, you know, you look at some of Billy's outfits and it's like, oh, man, that's like he just picked that up off the laundry pile and he paired it with that jacket and that tie. Wow, that is bold. And
this is now or this is then?
Both.
Right, yeah, because now your brother Bill is known for, I mean, just kimonos and things. Anything. Anything goes.
Yeah.
How do you, so as this is, you are, well, I want to get to the clothing, but actually first I want to go into
the early
Canal Shores. Mm. So I was lucky enough to play Canal Shores this fall. We played, through social media, I just invited anyone and everyone, and we played as a 20, how many people played? Colt gives us the numbers here. 24 people in one group.
Wow.
And we had the best time. We just had the best time.
It's a fabulous course. It's really challenging.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some of the toughest holes I've ever played on that course. The one that actually is in the news that they're trying to get rid of, not get rid of, but this guy is trying to have a politician build a road down the side of this wetland so he can get to this land that he bought that was never accessed, accessible whatsoever, is going to mess up the 10th hole, which is a weird little par 3 where it's under a canopy of trees and there's,
yes,
like marsh pretty much on both sides of it. And you got to hit like a 180-yard shot that doesn't get above 30 feet. So it's one of the toughest holes I've ever played. And there's trees everywhere on this thing. And when you put it on the green there, you really feel like you've done something.
It really is a great golf course because it doesn't abide by the typical, you know, concessions made to the golfer by the architect.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, hey, you know what? Here's the hole.
Hey, look, there's 140 yards over here we could use. Yeah.
We're sitting here. I just want to point out, we're watching, this is KJ Choi and, is that Paul Casey? No. Callaway. No, that's,
He needs a bigger bag with bigger letters.
It's a bigger bag.
But we do know it's the 14th hole, so that's the important thing, the important factor. But that is KJ.
So Canal Shores, I saw the, well, let's call it the turn stand there, right? Right before the farthest par 3 from the clubhouse.
It's at 9 now.
9.
Yeah, Billy ran the snack shack there back in the day, and that was kind of humorous because... his work acumen wasn't what it is today, now that he's really got his nose to the grindstone all the time. But
true?
No.
I was like, wait a minute, I don't know if he's being...
But he used to run the snack shack at a golf course, and he'd show up around 11:30. You know, I like to get up when the sun is warm, you know. And he'd be selling hot dogs, and there'd be a lot of guys showing up in, like, cowboy hats and dingo boots that you knew weren't buying hot dogs back in the day.
Yeah,
but
maybe looking for a salad or lettuce, if
you
will.
Yeah, they were looking for salad, hippie lettuce. But Billy, you know, entertained kind of, and he was a fun guy, and they didn't fire him. But he started as a groundskeeper, actually.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Assistant groundskeeper. It's true. He has the experience here. But he somehow got the gig to run the snack shack, and I think it only lasted maybe 2 seasons.
How old were you at the time?
Well, he's 12 years older than me, so
okay.
He was probably 24, and I was 12 years less.
And were you cruising by there? Was Canal Shores kind of the, was it a hang spot?
Well, it was a hang spot. I learned a lot of things on that golf course besides golfing. I made out with girls. I can point out different spots and different sexual conquests happened on that course.
First hole, second hole, third hole? No, I'm kidding.
So to speak. but also, we used to go and we'd ride our bikes over and you'd hunt for golf balls along the canals because, you know, when you're out of the fairway there, your ball's in some real muck.
Yeah.
It was much worse back in the day. And so we would... You know, if you found like 12 pretty good balls, you'd go to the starter and he'd actually let you play if you gave him a dozen of good balls and he'd resell them. But if you didn't, you'd just play the holes that, they couldn't see you on. So, you know, you'd go over and you'd play six different holes and let's go that way because she seems to be coming that way. And it was about avoidance. But, it's between the L tracks and the canals and... It was on the east side of town, not far from the beach. There were pretty girls on that side of town I didn't know. And everything about it was enchanting to me back when I was 12, 13 years old.
I think some of the most interesting people that I've met in my life have a long history of adolescent, trespassing on golf courses.
Well, it's there. It's there for the taking. I just found out my kids used to sneak onto Hillcrest all the time at night.
You raised your children in Los Angeles.
Yeah, they grew up right between, right next to Rancho Park and Hillcrest.
They chose the right course to sneak onto, that's for sure.
Well, apparently there was a free Powerade dispenser, and that was, everything they were looking for when they were 12 or 13. But
to give a little picture of Canal, I'll say one thing. If you're listening and you've already kind of tuned into the YouTube channel that we have over here at the Eric Anders Lang Show, we did an episode there. You can get a view of the course. Like Joel said, there's an elevated train running across it. There's a canal between sort of the nines. There's two par threes that cross it. It really is, for me as a a visitor there for one time, was just a really... It's one of the more unique layouts I've ever seen of a course that basically goes out and back.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. And, you go by the Baha'i Temple. There's only... Yeah. A few of those in the entire world. There's scenic, spots. And of course, I always have my history. I have a little golf tournament there every August, the Canal Show.
The Invitational?
Invitational. And we bring in first responders from all over the country. And we're going to bring in some probably more firemen this year that went through the fires here in California. And we bring in people from Sandy Hook and from 9/11 and bring them to Chicago and put them up in a really good hotel downtown for a couple nights, but then we bring them up to Canal Shores. And when it first started, that course has gotten better every year. Like, sure. You were there last year. It's gotten better every single year. This guy Tony has taken over as the superintendent, and Church Row bunkers and stuff he's putting in now. And wow, that used to be hard pan, and it's just in such great shape. But the first couple years they're coming out and really we're playing here, like, yeah. Yeah, and there's 16 bars on 18 holes. Good luck, fella. And we would bring these first responders out that have seen these, traumatic situations and been through hell. And they were, being first responders, they're like, is there something you want us to do? I'm like, no, just have a really good time.
Right.
And hit it hard, you know. Just have fun. We're here to say we appreciate what you do and just let loose for a couple of days. And they really love it.
I would love to be a part of that next time. I think that'd be great. I think any time where you can use golf as an opportunity to express gratitude is great.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We have a celebrity tournament down in St. Augustine, Florida. I think this is the 19th annual. And
That's sponsored by the restaurant.
That's Andy's restaurant, right? Andy's in charge of that.
I met Andy briefly.
We're all investors and figureheads, but Andy actually does the actual work.
Well, he's quite large. He's a tall guy.
He is. He displaces a lot of water in a beaker if you were to try to compare yourself to him.
I measure people by volume.
Yeah, that's what I do. Or, not mass, not weight, volume. But yeah, he has a great volume about him. But so I always say, if I can somehow help a situation and put myself in front of the train that is drinking and playing golf, I am there. I'm a second responder. Gosh,
conductor.
I'm going to be there, and it's fun to be able to help in that way.
Do you when you think of Canal Shores, do you think this is the birthplace of Caddyshack?
No, because I know that that was Indian Hill where we grew up caddying.
So tell me the full story, because I'm getting mixed reports, and I'm okay with, well, unintentionally lying, but I would like to at least work my way towards the truth.
Well, always face the truth. Well, we grew up caddying Indian Hill Country Club, which was very WASPy. I mean, there was a waiting list to get in, and somebody had to pretty much die to get in back in the day. And it taught you subservience. It taught you a lot of important lessons growing up caddying, and they paid you in cash when you finished, and that was good. And there was no taxes. But we grew up caddying for people that were far, far wealthier than we were.
All nine of you?
Well, the girls didn't caddy.
That would just be absurd. Or no, there were some. There at that time, there were female caddies in golf, or they just chose not to.
Yeah, no, they had jobs. They were waitresses and worked at the rectory. They did different things. Okay. They didn't get tapped on the thing that, hey, you guys are up at 6 a.m. say, you know, altar boying for mass. You seem like the type of guys we need. And so Indian Hill was down the road. We would either hitchhike down there or ride your bike down there. And you'd play basketball for the first hour until you got your loop, you know, kind of thing, or maybe 2 hours. And it was always a prestige thing to get in the early game, because that's when the good guys were playing.
With more money.
And you could either play basketball or cards. And my brother Brian used to say, you know, I made a lot more money playing hearts than I did caddying. And he actually used to make more money shagging balls, because they didn't have a driving range. They would just take you out and hit balls, and you'd go get them, which was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, well, sounds kind of developing country-esque.
Well, they're just the poor, you know, yeah. So
let me it's just... It's okay if they get hit.
Right, right. No, well, don't give them a helmet or anything.
You do a very good Brian Doyle Murray, that, by the way. That's
I do an imitation on all my brothers, except my brother Ed is the toughest, because it's just kind of... Maybe it's the same voice. I don't know.
It's just you.
Yeah.
Are you the same person?
No.
So Indian Hill. Were you ever at any point in your life averse to golf because of the culture clash that you experienced as a kid?
No, I think one of the things you learned is that you wanted to be the guy walking in your life. You didn't want to be the guy carrying the bag. And it kind of gave you a bit of ambition that, yeah, someday somebody else can be carrying the bag, and I'm going to overtip him as compared to the guy I'm caddying for today. And it made you ambitious, and it was interesting just to have a glimpse into the upper crust at that point, because we were, you know, 11 people living in a 3-bedroom house, basically, and these people were titans of industry and Reynolds Aluminum and companies that you knew the names of and stuff like that. And it was fascinating to see what they talked about, what they were interested in, and that kind of thing. But at the same time, just holding your tongue and not saying a word and rake that trap. You know?
At what point are you? You're the youngest, right? You said,
yeah.
I'm the youngest of three, which is not saying much. But for you, did you ever experience being the youngest of such a, you know, unusual and interesting kind of family? No matter what age you are, right? It sounds like things are a bit outside the norm, even for just other kids at school, right? Did you ever experience, was it ever for you like, well, what am I going to do differently? You know, because the youngest child has a very unique place, right? And so what was that like for you?
Well, I mean, your first day of class every year, the teacher would shudder, like, another Murray. I mean, there were people that feared some of my brothers, you know, that they may have been beaten up by back in the day or things like that. So you had a history. And people knew your family, and they knew there were a lot of you, so you wouldn't get picked on ever, because they knew that, you know, there's 5 other brothers coming for you.
Oh, strength in numbers. That. Yeah. That's good. Did you all stick together very well?
We're a pretty tight family. There's no, you know, nobody's not talking to somebody else. That happens in small families.
It's true.
I'm not talking to Jaden anymore.
Because each family member has a higher percentage of ownership. So.
Right.
Yours just sort of democratic.
Right. And, you know, if you said you weren't talking to somebody, somebody would come over and slap you on the back of the head. Go, what do you mean? Go talk to them. What are you talking about?
But yeah.
No, we're a tight family. And one of the reasons we get together is to golf. So that it's always been a bonding thing for us as well.
That's beautiful. What are some memories that stick out to you of using golf as a way of reconnecting with your family?
Oh, I don't know. I remember going up to Big Sand Lake, Wisconsin, way up in the North Woods, and playing with my brother Ed. And I was probably 9 or something like that. And I just thought that was the coolest thing, that I was actually out on a real golf course with my brother playing golf. But, it, you know, it's always a bonding thing. It's like, look at this. Look at what we're looking at. You know, so many places you go, the founding fathers stole a piece of land that wasn't like flat farmland that may have had the best vistas in the entire town, and they stole that for the golf course or the country club. And you know, you go to places like Shore Acres in Lake Forest, Illinois, like the vistas looking down, where Billy's Sleepy Hollow in New York, where you see these ravines down to the rivers and stuff like that, just the most beautiful views in the world. And I think Billy said it one time, one of the things I like most about golf is nobody's within 300 yards of me. And it's kind of like, you know, you're hiking or you're you know, out on the frontier, or you're doing something, but it's the vast amount of space you get even in a city like this. Mm. I mean, KJ Choi is a good 400 yards away from us now, and I feel safer.
The census did some type of study where they asked people where they were happiest, to describe the location at which they might feel the happiest. And the answer most commonly, if you're playing Family Feud, survey says a large open field with some trees.
Well,
and that sounds like a fair way to me.
Yeah, and hopefully the tree isn't in your way.
Hopefully you're not. Yeah, hopefully you're not in jail. So you come out to L.A. And do you land in LA with a script, or what's going on?
I was in the second city in Chicago, and
Craig T. Nelson, right?
No.
Who else was there? There were some other
second city.
I'm confused.
Your Belushis, your Aykroyds, your Gilda
Radners. I thought Craig T. Nelson was in there. No.
No.
He's a friend of the pod.
Well, he's a good guy, but yeah, no.
But he wasn't on Second City.
I don't think of him as an improviser, or well, he's pretty funny. But, yeah, no, it was a comedy cabaret theater in Chicago, started by, like, Alan Arkin and Ed Asner and Nichols and May way back in 1958. And I used to go and watch my brothers when they were in it. And Brian was in it from, like, 69 to 72. And Billy was in it from, like, 72 to 74. And used to go with my mother. And, you know, she'd say, what did he say? He said, shit, Mom. What? Shit, Mom. Oh, okay. All right, so you explain some of the swear words to her, but I never thought I would have the chops to do that.
Right.
And then, sure enough, 1980s, late 80s, I came along, and I was in a group of people that started the Improv Olympic in Chicago. And I got in a group with, like, I started out, it was Mike Myers and Bonnie Hunt I worked with, and then my company was with Chris Farley and Timmy Meadows and my buddy Dave Pasquese, who I was a roommate in Rome in college with, and it was just a fabulous time, and we came through with the right people, and somebody came one night, and I kind of got hired off the stage to be on a television show called Grand with Bonnie Hunt and Michael McKean and Pamela Reed, John Neville, John Randolph, great older actors, and I came out, and it was crazy. I was on a plane, and the woman next to me, I was coming out to do the pilot, and the woman next to me was taking a Cosmos stress test, and it was like, had you moved? Had you lost a job? Have you gotten a new job? Have you lost a sibling or a parent? Have you gotten pregnant? Have you had a child? Have you started menopause? And I had like 6 of the 7 or 7 of the 8 or something like that. And I was like, well, this should be a really stressful time, but well, I'm having fun. But so I came out with my new bride, and we had a baby right away, and we found, you know, we didn't know anybody in town except for Bonnie Hunt and Sean Masterson, whose parents started the People's Court.
Right. Oh,
so
wow.
They both had condos in Brentwood. So okay. I assumed, well, that's where like-minded people that want to live and be near the studios at a, you know, inexpensive area, Brentwood. So I rented a little house behind an apartment complex that was just the best setup for the beginning of our marriage and our first two babies, and I'm still here.
I love Brentwood.
Yeah, it was kind of nice then, too.
I want to unpack more of that scene, but I'm going to take a quick break, everybody. Stand by. All right, Precision Pro, everybody. Precision Pro Golf makes amazing golf rangefinders that are the perfect combination of price and performance. Listen, whenever I see someone on the range or wherever I go, if I see someone with a Precision Pro rangefinder, I see a paisano, a countryman, someone who's not interested in basically overpaying for a product. Same way I feel about Vice balls, you know? It's just like we cut out the middleman, we make a great product, and we get it out to you so that you can basically afford it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I would rather have something that's good value, right? Right now, the NX7 Pro is on sale. Whoa, $40 off. Go get it. $40 off. That's a good deal. What's even better is that you can get an additional $10 off for being a listener of the podcast when you use the promo code ERIC at checkout. That's $50 off. I mean, jeez, I'm going to go get some. I've said that already. Over 800 verified reviews from real golfers can't be wrong. Here's what Ty had to say about his NX7 Pro rangefinder. He goes, while waiting on the tee box in my last round, there was a hawk flying overhead. The NX7 Pro is so fast and accurate that I was able to measure the distance to the hawk while it was moving. 178.4 yards, if you're curious. So that's about that's an easy six, hard seven. If the NX7 Pro golf rangefinder can measure a hawk, it can definitely measure a flag. That's been my experience. Also Ty's experience. Go to precisionprogolf.com and use coupon code ERIC, E-R-I-K, to get $50 off the NX7 Pro rangefinder today. Swing with confidence, hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf. All right, one more read, folks. Adidas. Over 5 million pieces of plastic are floating in our oceans, which over time get broken down, making it easy for sea life to ingest, ultimately affecting our own food chain. So it is your problem. It's not just a world problem. It's you. It affects you. Adidas is working with Parley to prevent plastic entering our oceans and transform it into high-performance sportswear. Shoes is coming soon. Just hold on. Hold your hats, folks. I'm not even done with the ad. Stop trying to figure out what I'm going to say. Adidas is spinning the problem into what? A solution. The thread into a thread. I don't know what that means. It's written here. It says the thread into a thread. I don't know who wrote this. Adidas Golf is bringing eco-innovation to the golf course in the form of a special edition shoe. All right, this is legit, actually. This is the first time the Parley shoe has been a golf shoe. I've had it in form of a running shoe. I mean, look, it's a sick shoe that serves a purpose, okay? That's where you get it. The Tour 360 XT Parley, the first ever golf shoe. Oh, look, they already wrote it for me. The first ever golf shoe made from recycled. Oh, no, it's not called recycled. It's called upcycled. I don't know what that is. I feel like I should probably Google that. Upcycled plastic waste that was intercepted like Jason Bourne from the beaches and coastal communities before reaching the ocean. Dang, I didn't realize this is Jason Bourne's golf shoe. Intercepted. I mean, I'm a golf guy, but I also love football. Who doesn't love a classic interception, especially when it's Jason Bourne saving planet Earth? Entire upper of the shoe is made with threads spun. It's also a DJ. Amazing. From the upcycled plastic waste. My phone's ringing. It's Andrew Marler. Hang on. All right, well, that was a 20-minute phone call, but you have no idea. It just went by like that. Anyway, the Tour 360 XT Parley, the first ever golf shoe made from upcycled plastic. I already read this because it's got the intercepted line. Intercepted from beaches and coastal communities in a world before reaching the ocean. The entire upper of the shoe is made from thread spun from upcycled plastic waste. Built as the Tour 360 XT, you still get great traction and stability. I feel like, what's that line from Taken? I have a certain set of skills. They will take you. Available starting June 10th at adidas.com. And for those headed to the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, a select number of pairs will be sold on site. Get into it, folks. All right, back to the show. All right, we're back. So getting back to this L.A. history, I'm curious to know I'm sorry, I'm totally distracted because now Stuart is walking into the podcast set with an umbrella for Joel because there's a little sun coming in. So if you're watching this on YouTube, this is the behind the scenes. If you're listening, this is why we're distracted.
I'm enjoying the sun. I'm just looking a little squinty.
We can have him move it too. I mean, it can go both ways.
Oh, just ignore them.
Ignore them. Okay.
They're just trying to get attention.
Was when you got to L.A., was it like Annie Hall? Remember? Remember when he's in Annie Hall and he's out here and then Sunset Boulevard, they got the health food restaurant. Was it like that?
No, it wasn't.
What year did you get here?
I came out here in 89.
Okay.
And we had, like I said, we had this little house that was like the Batcave. It had a really long driveway, and the complex's pool was next to our house, and we had a little yard, and we had a garage you could pull in, and a doorway that went out to our own little fenced-in thing. It was a great place to have little kids. But we had so many Chicago friends out here already from the Second City that, you know, like if you had a party for the Bears game, you had to tell people on Friday, because if you told them on Wednesday, you'd have 100 Second City people showing up at your house for, you know, chicken and wings and whatever. And it was always best to wait a little bit on that.
But. And is this before there's a formidable improv group in Los Angeles? This is before Upright Citizens Brigade, right? It's
way before that. It was way before, well, it was before the Second City LA that was short-lived. I made some good friends out of that. But, it was back then it was the Groundlings were kind of the deal. And then we had our own kind of bowling night where we would have all these Second City Improv Olympic people that would get up and do a night of nonsense. And we did that at the Ash Grove on the pier down in Santa Monica, and we did it on the Third Street Promenade before there was a Third Street Promenade at a place called the Upfront. But it was literally like bowling night. You'd take names out of a hat and you'd have three different groups and you'd go up and do 45 minutes each kind of thing.
How does improv, I mean, I'm not trained, I don't know anything. I do find that I have a belief that as dumb as I think anybody may or may not be, if they are funny, there is a deep level of intelligence there. Do you share that or am I alone?
There's a lot of intelligence in honesty. If you go out there on stage and you don't try to be somebody that you can't pull off and you show and bear a lot of yourself, then you look intelligent by that choice. Like Chris Farley comes to mind. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't magna cum laude. He wasn't a Rhodes Scholar, but he was brilliant in the fact that he was just so true on stage. And it was like, you know, improvising with a yellow lab. There was nothing but love and fun. And I lived next door to him above the Mexican restaurant across from the Second City when we were there. And he was my lab for like 3 years. And just the greatest guy and a wonderful person to improvise with. The first scene we ever did, he got moved up to do the sets on the main stage at Second City, and we got the suggestion, we would go out and take things for the third act, take a bunch of suggestions and go back and sort of write, but not really write, just kind of throw out premises. And I said, well, we got Drunk Tank, so I'm your father, I'm picking you up at a Drunk Tank. Are we good? And he's like, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And we went out and we did like a 7-minute scene that was absolutely hysterical, because the father picking up the son was just as much of a drunk as the son, and he's trying to, you know, lecture him, but, you know, he keeps kind of coming back that, oh yeah, I'm an idiot too. And it was this wonderful scene, and Del Close, the improv guru, our director, came back and said, oh, that was absolutely fantastic. Script that exactly as it was. Do it exactly as you did it tonight. And, you know, firm believer in improv, you don't have to write anything on that. That's done. That's in the show. And when you're putting up a show, to have that one, you know, early on was just a huge feather in our cap. But it was the first time I'd ever been on stage with this cat. And that's how good he was, kind of, you know.
When you say yellow lab, I think I know what you mean, but can we go further?
I literally had a wicker chair in my apartment that I used to make him sit in. He'd come in and, you know, the first time he was in my apartment, he put a hole in the wall. he was screwing around with Pat Finn, another friend of mine, and Super Bowl 20 was the Bears Super Bowl. I had a big party. And he came in a Packers thing, and the next thing, in a Packers jacket, and the next thing you know, Pat Finn put him through a wall. And the Shroud of Farley was there for 3 years and put a Super Bowl poster over it. But I used to make him sit in the same wicker chair every time he came in my apartment. And there became a darker and darker stain underneath the wicker chair. He was a drooling, drippy mess. He was like a big yellow lab. And I should have put down papers, or I should have put down a tarp instead of a wicker chair. But I thought he couldn't hurt the wicker chair, but I didn't think about the carpet.
Do you see any connection between the ability to improvise well, if you want to call it that, if there is such a thing, and the game of golf?
Yeah, I can see having the right demeanor is very important in both. And listening and taking it all in. I mean, you know, they say you shoot 4 or 5 strokes better when you walk a golf course. And that's kind of like listening to the land and your feet, and you're feeling the contour of the hole. And I think there's things you learn by being there and taking it in, rather than getting out of the cart and putting down your beer and walking to the green. But I mean, I improvise still. I travel around the country. I do a live Whose Line Is It Anyway show called Who's Live Anyway with Ryan Stiles and Greg Proops and Jeff Davis and Dave Foley and Chip Esten. And Drew Carey just did some shows with us. But we go out and do a 90-minute show with absolutely no preparation. And, you know, it's...
Absolutely none?
It's the weirdest thing in the world.
You don't have any baked recipes that you know you can fall back on? You must have some.
Well, you've got stuff in your Rolodex that are responses characters to certain things, and you've got characters, and there's jokes you've heard throughout your life so that you can, you know, pay something off once in a while. But that's all on the fly, and you're just listening. There's nothing written. I mean, it's a big glass of scotch for me, and I go. And
what's the best part of that experience?
Well, payday. who would have thought you'd start making, you know, bank doing improv in your 50s? I mean, after doing it for free your whole life. But payday's good. But the best experience is when, you know, sometimes you're in a place and they're a mild audience and they're laughing, and you get done and all of a sudden they jump to their feet and you've got a standing ovation and you're like, wow, I thought they kind of liked this, but I guess they really like this. And that's always gives you chills. And there's an energy in front of a live audience where, you know, I think it's got to be good for your health to get that kind of energy all the time from other people. And you know, the other best part is, you know, one night you're in a 200-year-old theater that, you know, Busby Berkeley played in, and the next night you're in a brand new Center for the Performing Arts that's, you know, acoustically perfect in a completely different style. And that's kind of the fun. Last weekend, where was I? I was in the Villes. We went to Charlottesville, Knoxville, and Asheville. Asheville's a cool town.
Yeah, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great place.
You know, going to places that, you know, your missionaries of mirth, they're really happy to see you there. Like,
right.
Why? What are you doing here? Like, well, I don't know. A booking agent booked it, and we're here, and we're going to have fun. So, I don't know.
I don't know
what the question was.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to know what the question was myself.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's interesting. You're talking about the idea of getting paid to travel around and do what you would have done for free. And, you know, for me, that just makes me think of how golf is the best travel companion in life. Do you get to play when you're out there running around?
No, very rarely, because it's often like, you know, 4 or 5 hour drive to the next gig, and you don't have time. And then it'd be another piece of luggage. And
right.
So we don't, rarely, we have, but very rarely. And Ryan and I are really the only two golfers, I think, out of the bunch. So those cards don't come together very often.
Right. And so at what point...
But you're saying, like, imagine these guys getting paid to play golf. I mean, I know it's really hard to get to this level. I mean, I had nephews that were semi-pro and played in the different, you know, the Golden Bear Tour and stuff like that back in the day. It's so hard to get to this level, but I think it was Ernie Els. It was Ernie Els. One time he lost and somebody was giving him grief about coming in second. And he was like, are you kidding me? Did you see what I got paid for second place? And I'm playing golf for a living. And that's a horrible Australian accent, by the way. But yeah.
Yeah.
You're playing golf
yeah.
for a living. Give me a break.
Well, that's it. I would like to hear more of that in pressers. Do you actually care about my three putt? Like, yeah. I'm getting paid to play golf.
Oh, shucks. I only made $600,000 instead of $1.3 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's tragic, isn't it?
I'm curious to know. So, at what point are you? You're going through life. You're a working actor. You're on television. You're doing, you know, improv stuff every weekend, and then you're like, you know, I think I want to start a clothing company. That seems like a lot.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I have the time. I have a lot of downtime. Well, we have our golf tournament in St. Augustine, and the guy that runs our golf tournament.
That's coming up, right? When is it? What's the date?
April something.
April.
I don't know. I should check.
April, but I don't know. April, everyone go check it out.
April 24th. Stop on by. Yeah,
everyone is welcome.
I think it's that day. But Chris Seeley, who runs our tournament, said, you know, we should really do something. And he mocked up this stuff with a logo of Billy in a bucket hat with boots on, swinging a club. And it was Murray Brothers Golf. And like, well, we should do this. And I'm like, no, that's a cool logo. That's great stuff. We should do that. But, you know, who's going to do it? My brothers aren't the most hardworking fellas in the world. And, you know, we don't really have a way to get it out to the masses. And I was approached by these people from the Chive website. And this woman was going to give me a 10-minute pitch, and she got in, and an hour and a half later I was like, yes, exactly, you get it. And so we started it in cahoots with the Chive, and they had, you know, 3 million people coming to their website every week, and
that makes it easier to sell shirts.
Yeah, a lot easier, and they are in the shirt business and stuff like that that we didn't really have going for us at that time. So we got a reach in like the first week that would have taken us a decade. You know, I mean, I know Johnny grew up at Indian Hill.
I didn't know that.
Caddy for his family, but he's a stud over at LA Country Club here. But you know, he's rolled that out. It's taken a decade to get the recognition that he has, and
right.
and we had that like in a weekend all of a sudden. And between Billy and the Chive, it got out there really fast, and it's been a blessing. And you know, it all kind of, we had to talk Bill into it, and you know
why.
Well, you're using his likeness, and the our logo now is Billy throwing the club at Pebble.
I remember that, yeah.
And that was the Chive idea, that they wanted that on William Murray Golf. We classed up Bill Murray.
Mm.
Now he's like William it. Murray, yeah.
I like it.
It's much fancier. And we, you know, I had to kind of talk him into it, because people are always got ideas for him and things for him to
do. I want
do.
A piece of you.
Yeah, and we have the Murray Brothers Caddyshack, and he's part of that. And so this one was a little tougher sell, but I think he finally, it came out of generosity when I was saying, you know, all the brothers could be involved, and, you know, everybody could get kind of well on this thing, you know, and you wouldn't have to worry about paying anybody's dental bills some month or something like that. Everybody would have some, you know, some folding money for their pants and stuff, so that'd be nice. And because he is kind of a fashion goofball, he liked the idea of, oh, yeah, and we could do this, and yeah. So he's involved, and he likes it, and he likes the stuff, and he wears it. He just wore it at Pebble all weekend, and despite the overclothing, the extra rain gear that he had to wear. But it came from this weird little place of generosity that he was like, yeah, let's do that. And so that's kind of cool that it's based on good karma as well. And it's comfy stuff. It breathes well. It's good to golf in. And we do button-down stuff, because Billy grew up not wanting to wear polo shirts because that meant it was a hand-me-down from his older brother, Dad. Really? And so that's why you often see him golfing in a button-down. So we make a lot of performance button-downs you can golf in. And
oh, that's cool. I like those.
And sport coats that you can golf in. I don't know if you've ever been to Portmarnock outside of Dublin.
I have, yeah.
If you want to go in the pub after the round, you're not welcome without a sport coat.
Yeah, and right.
I was kind of like, these are $300 FootJoy shoes. these pants, we can't come in and have a drink.
Right.
Not without a jacket, no. And you see these guys pull up with their buggy and pull a jacket out of it that literally has moths, and you can see the mold on the jacket, but they're going in and having a drink, and they wouldn't let Billy and Brian and I to have a drink. So that was another reason to start the sport coats. And,
I like that.
It was pretty cool.
The you know, I already know that you're going to say yes, so because I wouldn't want to put you on the spot. But friends of the pod, you know, you come on. I like the clothing. I have no upside personally, but if you're listening to the podcast, Joel's going to offer you a discount code right now that you can use for.
Well, we have a little contest amongst the family. I had the idea that we should get cards printed up that say you've been Murray'd, and every brother would have a card that they could give out and give out 20% to anybody. So my card on the back says use code Joel20 and you get 20% off everything.
Joel20.
Yeah, you could try Joel70. I don't think it'll work, but I think Joel20 still works. And there's a kind of a contest within the company to see which brother is going to get the most people coming.
And on the 20% what's the duration? Discount. What's the duration?
It's free. It's forever.
That's you're about to get at least two people.
Right?
My parents, my mom and dad are definitely going to buy some stuff.
Well, that's good. That's good.
No, but it's cool. You know, because I am a big. I'm not like a fashion guy, but I'm definitely not like I definitely was deterred by golf wares early on. Definitely. And I didn't understand, like, you know, I didn't like it all. And so it's cool to see that you're part of the group that's changing the face of that.
Well, that was part of the reason Billy got involved, too, in the fact that, you know, golf was more interesting when Nicholas and Palmer were wearing plaid
totally.
Pants and stuff like that.
Classy.
And Johnny Miller was wearing cool stuff. The stuff now is like, oh, wow, it's neon. Yeah. But, I mean, look at these guys on the green here. There's nothing that's catching your eye whatsoever.
No.
And, you know, we all have kids. All the brothers have a lot of boys, and some of them are losing the interest in the game of golf because it takes too long. And, you know, who wants to go 5 hours without looking at their phone? And so we thought this might also bring some people into the game of golf if they could wear, you know, wild shirts, something subtle like I've got on, and, you know, stand out in the crowd a little bit and make it fun again. And,
right.
That is part of the impetus of the company.
Yeah, that's great. I really support that because I think, you know, again, that if we've got younger people walking off a course saying, I don't want to do that again, we need to take a long, hard look at why would we tell them that that's what we have to do to play golf?
Right. I don't understand the lack of love. And my kids like to play, but they like to play the par 3 by my house at Rancho. And because it's only 2 hours.
Niner?
Yeah, it's 9 holes. They're in and out in 2 hours. And
I've never played that.
They enjoy that. It's kind of fun.
Do you get out there? You're a member at Hillcrest, you said?
No. I'm not a member anywhere.
Okay.
My wife is not a golfer. And many years ago, I was putting my second addition on my house because I grew up in construction a bit too. And she said, well, you can join Wilshire. And they had a great deal if you were under 40. Or you can do your addition on the house. And right then on cue, like $40,000 worth of wood dropped in the driveway. I said, no, I'm doing the addition. And so the 40 thing passed, and I just have never been able to justify dropping $180,000 to be a member.
It's a lot.
When I live next door to Rancho Park.
So did you play Rancho pretty regularly?
Yeah, like once a week.
Really?
Yeah.
And so what's your Rancho protocol?
Mine, I've got some older friends, my old next door neighbor, who have a tee time every Monday and Friday. So if I'm in town, they let me play with them. Or I just walk over there by myself because I'm an actor. You never know, you might get an audition at 5 p.m. for the next day. So I don't plan ahead very much. And so a lot of times I just go over there and I'll put my name in and I'll hit some balls, and then they call you and say you're on the tee. And it works out quite beautifully if you get there early enough.
And you get paired up with three that you don't know?
Complete strangers.
How do you like it?
I like people. I like talking to people. I like learning what other people do for a living. One of the best improv notes I ever got was from my brother Bill. He said to me, he said, you know, people want me to talk about me all the time. And I find it's far more interesting to talk about them. And it's flattering to them to talk about what they do. And I also learn what they do and what goes on in their lives. And I'll keep asking them questions about, you know, what their life's like. But like you, that would be good for you, because when you're an improviser and, you know, you're supposed to be an insurance man or an actuary, and all of a sudden you actually have ideas and thoughts and things that you've learned from some guy who is an actuary that you can put on stage all of a sudden, that makes you look that much smarter and keeps you, you know, a better improviser. And you've made that guy feel good rather than talking about One Crazy Summer or Mad Men for an hour and a half.
Why do you think it is that some people aren't interested in other people?
Well, much of the world is wildly self-centered.
Yeah, no, I notice it. I'm wondering why, though.
Why is all the wealth in the top 1%? I don't know. That's a weird thing to think about. But and a lot of celebrities will gladly talk about. Look at the hypocrisy of this all. I'm talking about myself for the last hour with you here.
Well, but I've invited you here to do that.
Yeah, but
by the way, you just made me look great. Thank you.
I should ask. Yeah. You are wildly cool, and here I am.
No, but I mean, you know, I agree with what you're saying and what you're saying you heard from your brother, which is, it is kind of boring to talk about yourself, but at the same time, you have a story, and I'm asking you to come out here and tell it. And so, actually, you're the one doing the greater service, because if you don't like talking about yourself, which you may not, then you've come out here merely to do that, and so thank you. And maybe to support the family business that you've all sort of rallied behind.
Businesses,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I like I say, I'd rather golf and drink to help, but if I can, you know, talk about myself, I guess I'll throw myself in front of that train as well.
Rancho Park.
Where did you grow up?
Jesus. Well, part of the reason why we can't do it is, so I do two podcasts a week. I do a Monday pod where I just talk.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like your weekend show, and I have very little plans, and I've told everyone where I grew up, which is New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
But after the pod, you and I go for a walk.
Okay.
We'll go down a walk, we'll short pier.
That'd be great. All right. I know this neighborhood. You're going to have a hard time finding a private spot.
Yeah. But I'm curious to know, Rancho Park, right? I would say one of the jewels of public golf. People say golf is dying, but I go to Rancho Park, and I have trouble playing golf there because it's so busy.
Well, it is crowded. It was at one point the busiest golf course in America, and because of the most rounds played a year, and a lot of that has to do with the weather here. But
sure.
Don't tell anybody, but they raised the price a couple years ago, and it's gotten down to like a 4-hour and 15-minute round. And don't tell anybody, but there was a group of guys, I swear to God, it was the same 6-8 guys that would go to 6 o'clock mass at St. Tim's across the street and come across, and at like 7:48 would change it from a 4-hour round to a 6-hour round. And the $30 price tag has gotten them to go to Whitsitt in the Valley instead.
Okay.
Not Whitsitt, Woodley Lakes.
Right. Good course also.
Three lakes never come into play. Woodley Lakes.
Lakes made of wood.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to like shank it completely to even find the water.
Yeah.
I mean, it would almost a 90 degree. You'd have, like, if you tipped it with a driver, maybe it could go that way into the lake. But I don't know who designed that one.
Possible for me, I'll say.
Yeah.
I could do that.
I had a buddy put out the tire on the golf cart, and we were right even with the tee box, and he just nicked the ball, and it went directly 90 degrees that way and took out the tire. It cracked, you know, it dented the rim right at the edge. And
wow, you could never, that's harder than a hole in one.
You couldn't do that in a million years. That's a double albatross.
That's not touching the ball and it goes in the hole.
That's like, yeah, getting a one on a par five.
I guess so. They got the code, they got the story. Is there anything I'm missing? Is there anything I'm missing? Is there anything you want to add to my parents who are listening?
It's so good of them to tune in every day.
It really is. It's a phone call, basically.
No, whosliveanyway.com is the touring company that comes to the town near you. We get to Jersey.
Yeah.
We've been there. WilliamMurrayGolf.com. That's the answer to all your problems.
Joel100 is the code
for
100% off.
Just keep working your way down. Start at 100, and I think you're going to have success around 20.
Thank you for sharing that with the listeners of the podcast.
My pleasure.
And thank you for your time.
Well,